you need to go on mute, because that'll make, I mean, you can chime in any time you like, and you're the only one there, and you're in a quiet room, so just stay online.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Well, I'll declare this ordinary meeting of Central Table Owns Water open. Thank you all for your attendance. I'd like to acknowledge the Wiradjuri people, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which we're meeting today, and pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to other Aboriginal Australians who are present here today. I'd also like to record the fact that this meeting is being recorded by audio means. A copy of the audio recording will be on Council's website within the next 2 weeks, and the basis on which it's recorded is set out in the business paper for this meeting. Next item is apologies. I don't think there's any apologies because all councillors are present. Confirmation of minutes. There were two previous meetings we need to confirm the minutes of. Firstly, the ordinary meeting on the 9th of December. A copy of those minutes has been circulated. Would someone like to move it off those minutes?
I'll move.
Councillor Durkin, thank you. Second, Councillor Newstead. Any comments on the minutes? If not, those in favour, thank you, Carrie. The next set of minutes is the extraordinary meeting we held on the 21st of December to award the contract for the clear water tank at Kharkhor Reservoir, Kharkhor Treatment Plant. Someone like to move that one? Councillor Walker. Councillor Best, thank you. Any comments, corrections to those minutes? If not, those in favour?
Aye.
Carried.
It's all good. We've got passed on it.
Yes.
Anyone like to raise anything arising from either of those sets of minutes, not otherwise on the agenda? If not, we will move on. Disclosure of interests. Are there any disclosures of interest?
No, Mr. Chairman.
No disclosures of interest. Public forum. There's no public forum today.
No.
Mr. General Manager. The chairperson's minute. I do have a minute which I'd like to read now and ask you to support. I'd like to record the fact that at a ceremony held this morning in this building, it gave me great pleasure to announce the fact that this administration building at the Blaney Water Filtration Plant is henceforth going to be known as the Darrell Sligar Centre. We had a very moving ceremony with most of Darrell's siblings, and there's a lot of them present, and his children and his grandchildren, and we celebrated in a very appropriate way, and we had a morning tea for the family and staff of Central Tablelands Water and some councillors this morning. There's a bit of media coverage for the event, and it was a fitting tribute to Darrell Sligar, who served this council with distinction for 43 years. I'd like that minute to be recorded and noted. Are all those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. Councillor representation. Maybe I should go first. I've mentioned these to B already. Since our last ordinary meeting in early December, so 2 months ago now, we have had, not just me, but other councillors, the opening of Trunkmain K on the 16th of December. There was the meeting with Clayton Barr, the opposition spokesman on water, on the 12th of January, including a visit that he made to Lake Rollins. We had a meeting on the 19th of January with Phil Donato, the state member for Orange, to update him on current developments with CDW. I had a meeting on the 20th of January with Infrastructure Australia, who are writing a chapter on water for their forthcoming review of the state of infrastructure in Australia, and they want to use the central west of New South Wales as a case study on how water utilities cooperate together for the benefit of everyone. So that was a good opportunity to showcase the region. And as the portfolio chair for the region, I participated in that. That was an excellent meeting. Hopefully we'll get some good publicity out of that. And finally, recently, last week, we had a meeting with Dr. Jim Bentley and Amanda Chadwick from the water section of DPIE. They came to a session of the joint organisation in Orange, and then, thanks to the good work of the general manager, they were able to come and visit Lake Rollins and have a look at the dam, so that when they get to hopefully finally assess and approve one of our options for the augmentation of Lake Rollins, they'll have some pretty good concept of what they're actually talking about. I have an impression of what we want to do. So that was another good session. So that's all for me. Any other representation to be reported?
Councillor Newstead also attended the meeting with the Shadow Minister.
With Colin Barr, yes.
Yeah, don't worry, Senator. Hope you're truckling okay.
Thank you, Craig.
Yeah, and as did Councillor Walker as well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on. Notices of motion. Had to be notice of motion.
No, Mr. Chairman.
No. Okay, we'll move on to the substance of the meeting, the reports of staff. Item 1, strategic planning workshop on page 3 of the business paper. It's a recommendation that we endorse the actions of the general manager. Someone like to move that?
I'll move.
Councillor Durkin, thank you. Seconded Councillor Best. Thank you very much. Would you like just to talk about this for a second, Gavin, and before we put this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Councillors will recall that back in September 2018, we held a futures workshop with our constituent councils to come up with the strategies to move CKW forward. There's a number of strategies that were developed from that workshop, strategies which required the collaboration with other stakeholders, with our constituent councils and others, as well as other strategies that we could do independently. So we've moved forward with a number of those strategies, but now, as I've said in my report, it's time to review those strategies and hold a follow-up workshop to see what progress we have made with those strategies and look at any further strategies moving forward, also noting that there is an election in September as well, so potentially there could be some new council members who we don't know, but keeping in mind that we review these strategies that are in place, which this council has set, to see the progress we've made on those and then move forward from there. So I've approached Annette Davison, who facilitated the last workshop, who's highly regarded. She works for all of her company's Risk Edge, and I'm just waiting on several dates for that workshop to be held. So we're looking around that April-May period to have that workshop.
Thanks, Gavin. Any questions of Gavin? No, I think this is an important event. It was an important workshop we held a couple of years ago, and as Gavin said, it's time to identify how we're going against our strategies and consider whether they're still appropriate and consider whether other strategies need to be supplemented to what we're doing at the moment. So we look forward to that, and I think it's appropriate that this council considers the strategy, given that we've now been working together for quite some time and have got a pretty good idea on some of the issues facing CDW. If there are new councillors who come in after the elections, well, they can be briefed on what our current strategies are. Those in favour? Thank you.
Yeah.
Item two, on page four, the developer servicing plan review. The recommendation that we note the report, I'd like to move that. Councillor Walker, thank you. Councillor Newstead. Yes, this developer servicing plan has been worked on for quite some time now. I forgot when it was. We had that meeting in this room with Adam Consulting. Gav, what's...
Through you, Mr. Chairman. As I've noted in my report, that's taken longer than originally anticipated. There has been some major changes in the new guidelines which we've been working through. The latest is that we're looking at reviewing or updating our capital works program, or the capital works items in that and the calculations. We're now being advised through DPIE water that we can include, for example, the trunk main that was recently built between the CTW and Orange, to include that in our capital works program to be captured in this developer servicing plan. And also other infrastructure that's been built over the years, and also new infrastructure coming into play, such as the 12 meg reservoir. So, as we know, that's going to be a huge ongoing expense for us, especially regarding depreciation. So, it's important that we factor that into this calculation moving forward. So, the cost of new connections, they can share the load in contributing to our system and maintaining our system going forward. So the timelines there we've got there. We're also, once again, we're working with Adam Consulting with this review of the plan. The timelines are there. We're working through the capital works data, which will be forwarding to Adam Consulting, and then they'll put it together with the methodology, and then we'll forward that on to DPIE Water for their consideration and approval to make sure it meets the best practice guidelines. And following that, it'll come back to council to be put up for public, or for endorsement to go on public display. That period for this plan is 42 days under the best practice guidelines. So once that's put up to council to be endorsed, and once that we receive those public comments, it'll go back up to council for adoption. So I've put in there too, it'll be noted that it all depends too on the DPIE processes. In the past, we know we have had, that there has been some delays there. One of the potential delays here, or further delays, is if we have to have another audit on the DSP. So we've been, as I said, working closely with DPIE Water, their contact there, to get that approval of our methodology moving forward. And so far, it has been positive. So we've emphasised that one size doesn't fit all with all water utilities, and that is obviously a cost to put this plan together. So so we're working to those timelines now.
It's quick to read the plan we've been working on for a while now. Did that actually go to audit, or was that sort of in the process of being audited?
No, it did go to audit.
Yeah.
We had a full audit on that, and then that's when it came back, and we were then advised that we could put additional assets,
yeah,
or include additional assets in the calculation, which helped with our plan.
Yes, okay. And did I get you right? We can include the 12 meg reservoir at Carpool in this as well.
That's right, yep.
But that won't be quite finished by April?
No, but it's the construction. We've had it signed off that the construction will begin.
Yeah.
And it'll be in that period of our, because the plan, they usually go for 5 years, the plans. So it'll be within that period of that, of our new DSP. So we'll include that in.
Well, the timing's quite good in that sense, that we'll capture Philly. Recent capital works, the 12 meg reservoir, the Orange Pipeline, Trunk Main K, the pump station at Woodstock, and all those things.
That's right.
And start recovering some of the cost of those.
And even though it's grant funded, it still can be included in the calculations.
Yeah.
So, because we're the ones at the end of the day that own and operate those, maintain those assets.
Yeah. Okay.
The question is about the audit. Have you changed it too much from the original audit? Is we're not going to ask it to re-audit again, basically?
That's right, yeah. And so far, with our conversations with DPI, with our contact, the methodology we put forward, he can understand that, and he realises the onus, or the it's an onerous task on us then to go back to water and costly. And he's been so far approving our methodology as we've been working through it. So, yeah. And he has made the comment before that it's, and at the end of the day, it's up to the council to approve and adopt the DSP. They're there to provide guidance under the best practice management guidelines. So.
What's the cost of the audit? Do you know, like, roughly?
Roughly, are you looking at probably, I think from memory, around probably upwards of $10,000?
And do we allow to the budget for a second audit of the plan? Do we know?
Probably not at this stage. And it's worth it, consulting and doing it still within our original budget.
It's hard not to get the audit, but we don't want to pay the extra money to do it, but it's such a contentious issue that it's, sometimes the external one thing is probably
And as I said, it goes on then on public display for 42 days once council endorses that document too, so that's when we'll get the fee.
Yes, and of course, well. at the end of the day, sort of, as you said, it's a decision for councillors whether we adopt the full charge as calculated, or whether, I know in planning council we had a DSP for the sewer and we ended up very substantially discounting the sewer connection fees because the calculated charge was through the roof. And just to give you some idea, John knows this, that for the a DSP for sewer connections in Millthorpe, calculated charge was $43,000 per connection, and Blaney Council decided that we would charge $7,500, so quite a substantial sum, but nothing like what was calculated. So we'll have the same decision to make when we've got a number.
Early indications it'll be less than our existing charge. So
yes, I think we had an issue was raised by one of our customers earlier on, and we, I think, set a policy that if the charge is less than the current charge, then we should give the benefit of that to, because it's taken us so long to get this finalised, give the benefit of the lower charge to those established connections first from 1st of July last year.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, too, it's important also that the New South Wales Productivity Commission has released a report where they put forward some recommendations in relation to infrastructure contributions. I think I requested sending it on to you. And they're pretty strong on, full costing. The report is not really, they don't like to see subsidies that when you spread across the cost. They say the cost of the development should be borne by those doing the development, in principle, I'm talking in principle and principle terms here, because what you can potentially do is create a spike in the cost of land if you're subsidising those particular developments also. That's just something to bear in mind, but we can have that discussion at the time, but it's an interesting point that they've made.
It's a very interesting point as to how much of the cost of new developments in all our villages around the whole of the county area should be paid for by those doing developments, and how much of the cost should be borne by all the connections on the basis that it's in the interests of all of our towns and villages to encourage development. So existing customers will effectively, through their recurrent annual charges, be paying for something which, on strict principle, the developer should pay 100% of. So it's a balance we've got to get right. And of course, through the whole of our county area, we've got some towns with very high values of land that have been developed. Millthorpe is one of them, is definitely booming. And we've got other towns connected to our system where the price of a block of land is really very cheap. So it's hard to get the balance right.
Yeah.
Okay, any more questions? Okay, okay, those in favour?
Aye.
Carried. Item 3, demand management report. There's a recommendation that we note what the general manager's done in organising a workshop on the 4th of March. I'd like to move that. That's the best, Councillor Newstead. Thank you very much. We'll take the report as read. Any questions of Gavin? It's a workshop here on the 4th of March. We've had to debate these plans a couple of times, and there's certainly different views around the council table as to what our approach would be to water restrictions and so on. And so it's a pretty important workshop to get to that one, so we can make sure that when we adopt these plans that everyone understands why we're doing it, what the rules will be.
Yeah. And it'll also, Zoom option will also be available for those councillors who can't physically make it here. So Craig, I know that you work on Thursdays, so you may not be able to get here. So we'll have that Zoom functionality as well.
That'd be great.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
You might still be on holidays.
Yeah,
well,
unless we relocate
down in Wollongong. Yeah, I think he's in training to be Santa next Christmas. Those listening to the audio won't appreciate the reason for that. All right, those in favour? Gary, thank you. Item 4, a report on Lake Rowland's augmentation project. Someone like to move that? Thank you, Councillor Best. Thank you. So, Gav, can you fill us in on the latest? I think we're all up to speed up till before Christmas, so since then?
Yes, through you, Mr. Chairman. The latest is, and as the Chairman touched on earlier, we've been advocating fairly strong over the last month. We've had a meeting with the Shadow Minister for Water, Clayton Barr. He was around the region, and so we organised a meeting with him just to talk to him about explain our operations and also the augmentation project. Likewise with the member for Orange, Phil Bernardo, we usually provide Phil with an update, noting that the combined area is in the Orange electorate, so we'll keep him up to date with how we're travelling, once again, with our operations and the augmentation project. We've been able to secure a meeting with Minister Pavey on the 23rd of February at Parliament House to discuss the Lake Rowlands augmentation project. That was a good meeting to finally arrange, seeing that we've been pushing for a while to make that happen. And as the Chairman also said, we met with the CEO of the water sector, DPIE Water, Dr. Jim Bentley, and he's Executive Director of Water Sector Reform, Amanda Chadwick, last week as part of the Central New South Wales JO meeting, regional meeting, and also we welcome the opportunity to have them out here at CTW's office as well as out at Lake Rowlands. So. We really appreciated them taking the time to come out and meet with us. And at least now they can visualise what we're talking about and know our strategy in building water security for the region, as well as obviously our existing consumers. Moving forward, we understand there's a part of the JO meeting and also meeting with Dr. Jim Bentley. We understand there's a new water infrastructure section being developed or set up within DPIE Water to move these, or to start to progress water infrastructure projects in New South Wales. Noel and I had the opportunity yesterday to meet with Ingrid Emery, who's working for the CEO of Infrastructure Water New South Wales. She was travelling through after a visit to Waimbla Dam and popped in to meet with us briefly and introduce herself. We took her out to Lake Rollins to explain our augmentation project and now It was music to my ears because she said that now that she'll be the single point of contact for us to deal with, especially with our augmentation project. She did say that the modelling for these, as is in my report, the modelling is still going on for the pipeline project between Lake Rollins and Carcor Dam, as well as the augmentation project for Lake Rollins, which was great to hear. And also for the Wyambler project. So they're using the same model, so at least now we can compare apples with apples once that's done. She said that at this stage it is still planned for that modelling to be completed by March. She doesn't know if it's beginning of March or end of March, but by March. And also that her boss, the CEO of Water Infrastructure New South Wales, will be meeting with us when we meet with the Minister on the 23rd of February. So she can understand, she said that she understands our frustrations that we have been experiencing, especially the whole point originally being two weeks and now it's been nearly 30 weeks. And she said that the reason behind that was the waiting on this on the modelling to be completed, and she did apologise for that delay. So she acknowledged that we, CTW, had done everything we could do to keep the project moving, and then it was due to the modelling that had to be done, and the same modelling is being done across the state. So realising there's a lot of projects, or major water infrastructure projects that are in play at the moment.
But the modelling we did, the secure yield study, as part of our business case, and submitted that, the modelling they're doing is that to update what we put in with our preliminary business case.
My understanding is that they'll be using parts of that secure yield study to feed into the modelling that they're using. Noel, I don't know if you've got another.
I'm really unaware of what their modelling is doing and how they're making changes. Now, I'm hoping that the differences between what we have been stating is abnormal in the secure yield study, that it doesn't match with what we see. It's been taken into account. So I certainly welcome the opportunity that they do revisit, but keep, as General Manager has said, we compare apples to apples, because that's always been a concern about the Carcor Dam to Lake Rollins pipeline, and having a different set of rules under their modelling than what Lake Rollins augmentation has.
Yeah, and it was a fantastic opportunity yesterday to take Ingrid out to Lake Rollins, and now Lake Rollins again is spilling again. It's at about 102%, and for to witness that is
And Carcor down 29.4 I saw this morning.
So there
wouldn't be many dams overflowing at the moment in all of New South Wales.
Wouldn't think so. So we've been pushing as hard as we can. Feels like we are making traction,
DPA Water Scanning Sensors revamped the whole bureaucracy around water in the state. I've got a team, I think they mentioned five people involved in their sort of senior group looking at water, but looking at different aspects of it. And they have established, or are about to establish, what is it called, the Town Water Risk Reduction Program. There's quite a bit going on, and there's a bit of scepticism that this is just another reshuffling the roles, and someone else has got a different plan this time. We've had lots of those over the years. We'll have to wait and see.
So is that going to be a separation between town water and other waters? Is that why they're doing that, do you think?
I think so. I think what this program is looking at is purely town water. Town water, they call it the Town Water Risk Reduction Program, and when they talk about risk reduction, the risks they're talking about reducing from the fact sheets they put out seem to be the risks of running out of water water restrictions and drought type risk, as well as water quality risk. So they're also looking at things like the training of water operators. So it's all risks facing town water, but it is just town water.
It could be very beneficial for us then.
But the concept's good. Mm-hmm. They put out a fact sheet, which makes good reading. They've identified five different risks facing local water utilities, you know, west of the mountains. And makes interesting reading because I think three or four of the five are the same or very similar to the risks we identified in our strategic workshop facing CDW. Long distances, small number of connections, high infrastructure costs, big depreciation charges, all those things that we sat around and talked about a couple of years ago, they now identify as facing a lot of water utilities west of the mountains. Yeah, so that's the Town Water Risk Reduction Program. So we're just getting underway now.
Thanks, Gab.
Any more questions? No? Before our next meeting, we will have the meeting with the Minister, and we'll find out a bit more then. Those in favour?
Aye.
Carried. Item 5, the Council Resolution Update. Someone like to move that? That's a walk of Council of Best. Thank you. Just go straight to any questions on that summary of how we're getting on with our resolutions. I've got one question just arising out of the Lake Robbins augmentation project and the 2.2 metre dam wall raising and so on. This has been around for ages, the negotiations with Mr. Whitehead, and the last entry there is over a year ago. Should we be calling off negotiations with Mr. Whitehead? I mean, in all probability, hope, we're going to at least get a 2.2 metre dam wall raising, and whatever it was, I've forgotten now, we were trying to do with Mr. Whitehead, presumably has been superseded by what's happened.
Tidy it up. Mm. Yeah. No, look, you had contact with him that time. Yeah. No, we'll make a note.
It's taken so long, nothing's happened. We agreed in principle, I think, to do a land swap or a boundary adjustment or something near the Darrington Bridge. And given what's happening now, I'd hate to think that we were locking in something which, if we get approval for the 2.2 metre dam wall raising, I wish we hadn't actually done that.
Yeah.
But now it's not too late to change. Yeah.
No, we haven't formalised anything. It was only initial discussions with...
Yeah, but I'd be trying to go back to him and say, listen, excuse the pun, a lot of water's passed under the bridge since we first spoke to you about this.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of plans afoot for increasing the capacity.
Yeah.
And we just want to put on hold any further arrangements with you until we know what's going to happen.
We'll contact him and have that conversation.
So that's just a question for me. Any other questions, councillors? If not, put that first in favour. Thank you. Move on to item 6, financial matters. Someone like to move that? Craig, did you just move that? Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks, Craig. Moved by Councillor Beveridge, seconded by Councillor Councillor Newstead. Any questions of Peter? Peter, you want to draw attention to anything in particular?
For you, Mr. Chairman, as most people are aware, the interest rate environment on any sort of bank savings accounts or investments is getting very, very difficult. The rates are being very, very low in response to a very low cash rate. There's a huge amount of liquidity in the system, and a lot of approved deposit institutions, banking institutions and the like are not actually actively seeking funds at the moment. They're awash with liquidity, so it's becoming very difficult to place money at a reasonable level of return. Who would have thought that the rate of return of 0.41% is considered probably pretty good, pretty sound in this sort of environment? We have been sort of looking at our options as to what we can do in this regard. It's a very tough environment, as I indicated. We have investigated actually getting a Macquarie cash account. It's currently offering 0.45%, which is probably equivalent to a 12-month term deposit at other institutions, so it's something we're looking at. We've got the account nearly opened, and we will start putting some funds in there. We can't get the funds back. It's a 24-hour turnaround. We can't get the funds back instantaneously, but certainly it will give us an opportunity to place some funds there and get it back if we need liquidity fairly quickly. Our current business overnight saver account, as indicated in the report, is currently at 0.01%. So it's very, very low. So it's a battle.
Our investment policy, this Macquarie...
It does,
Macquarie... That doesn't count as as cash, because the 24 hours, or does it count as cash?
It'll count as, in terms of our policy, we actually designed the policy wording so the counterparty limits worked on both our cash holdings and our investments together as a pool. So that sort of avoids the situation where you can have a change in your... sometimes you can inadvertently not comply with the policy and what have you, and because our funds are with the Commonwealth Bank, that's an A-rated institution, so that gives us a little bit more flexibility of what we can do with the balance of the portfolio. And currently Macquarie Bank's at A+, so it's a pretty highly rated institution at the present point in time. The risk you take, as indicated in the report, is that at any time they could come out tomorrow at 11 o'clock and say, well, the interest rate's been slashed to 0.2%. That's the risk you take. But it gives us a little bit more flexibility too if we keep some money in that account, in that we can push some of the other TDs out longer in term and chase a bit of higher return on the curve. There's not a lot of high return in the curve though, unless you want to really go out to 5 years, you know, and out there you can gain a bit more. But we're certainly not in a position to lock funds up for 5 years with our capital program. So maybe we can look, we're working generally within the 6 month to 12 month space. Maybe we can look to try and push that out a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we'll see how we go, and we'll see how the status of these projects that we've currently got under consideration is, because if we need those funds, then we need to be aware that we can get our hands on them. But the environment is extremely difficult, extremely tough, and I think people would understand, even at a personal level, there's a lot of bank accounts now, particularly access accounts, that don't play anything. Mm. You know, you can have an overnight account which is paying a very low rate, 0.1% or so on. Who would have thought, you know, a number of years ago that would be the case? So it's a difficult environment, and I think across the sector, the local government sector, I think we're going to see obviously a big drop in investment income, and a number of councils generally had big amounts of restricted funds, big portfolios, so they got 4 or 5% of their total income from interest. Those days are gone in the current environment. The indications are it's going to stay that way. I think the chairman of the Reserve Bank said his words were up to around 4 years. So I think that's the situation at the moment. Mm. So we're trying to make do the best within our policy framework and make sure that our risk appetite is acceptable. We're not going to go out there and do anything that's going to chase, you know, higher risk with potential downside. Mm. Remembering, of course, that the government guarantee does protect you on the first $250,000 per institution. So it does give you a little bit of protection there, but most of our bundles are a minimum of $500 anyway. So, but I think our portfolio is probably the best we can do. It's still making a reasonable return in the current environment, and it's very secure. Those institutions we've dealt with there, we haven't had any issues with over a number of years.
Okay, thanks, Pete. Any questions? No, it's amazing that you get a higher rate for call money than you get for a term deposit.
That's
strange times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, those in favour?
All right.
And carried. Item 7, page 18, QBRS. It's been included in the business papers, and I'd like to move that we accept that and adopt the variation. Right. Councillor Durkin, seconded Councillor Best. Thank you. Would you just like to take us through particular variations?
Yeah, for you, Mr. Chairman. The principal variations we have there is the two major ones is obviously the area of user charges and excuse me, depreciation. The Trump made gay when we did the budget, we thought we'd be commissioning Trunkline K early in the financial year. We've just commissioned it. We had the opening in December. So we've got that, and we have discussed this previously, Mr. Chairman. We have this residual depreciation, remaining depreciation on the old pipeline. So we now get that, it's out of the system, and we're up depreciating the new pipeline from December when we commissioned the new one. So that adjustment brings to an end the old pipeline in our books, brings it back to zero. The other one is the user charges. As councillors would be aware, we've had a fairly wet period this year. We've also had some fairly mild temperatures even in the summer months. It's allowed us to replenish our water stocks, which is a great thing, but the price of doing that across the building is that your demand is going to go down during that period where you've got that wet weather and moderate temperatures. So in this budget review, I've brought it down by $250,000. I didn't have the March update until Monday of this week, and our water sales have sort of steadied off again. So, depending on what happens with the final read for the June quarter and what happens during the initial period, the adjustment may need to be greater than that. This is not without precedent. I went back and had a look at the records in 2010-11 and 2011-12. I think they were wet years, and we did have a similar impact on our water sales, and that causes your operating result to prima facie look poorer than previous years. But if you really look at the circumstances and the things that you faced, the situation, well, it's not a bad result. The other factor with our operating result, as we've discussed, is the depreciation area, and we do have a major revaluation in 21-22 of our water infrastructure, and we are looking at that now, doing some preparatory work on that in terms of how we can potentially reduce that depreciation impact going forward. Looking at two principal areas, one is the life of the assets, and the other one is the componentisation of the assets, and to see if there's any issues there with the componentisation that we can basically look at. So we have started having some thoughts about that. I've spoken to the asset officer, because it is now, and we've had this happened last year, it's now around 40% of our operating costs. So it's starting to, it's a very, very big figure. Unlike road assets, which you can, transport assets and road assets, which a number of councils have looked at, and they've actually had an opportunity to put different useful lives on their pavement, depending on the level of pavement, does give you an opportunity to have some lower levels of the pavement that's not actually reconstructed when a rehabilitation is done, and actually then sometimes you can actually lower the depreciation going forward. A little bit more difficult with water assets. You can try and put more, look at assets and see if there's any additional bulk earthworks or any civil works that are there that's obviously got a longer life. Bulk earthworks, obviously a good example is bulk earthworks with the reservoir that's coming up. Bulk earthworks has basically got an indefinite life, so it's very similar to land. So the higher that component compared to the cost of the asset, it gives you an opportunity to reduce it. So we are thinking about the issue. We don't have the solutions at the moment, but we certainly are aware of it, and we're sort of working towards it. Another couple of things there was we got some residual funds back, and I did do, there is a later report which I've done to council about the Carcourt Orange pipeline, which has been finalised, so those funds have come back to us. And we just had a couple of minor adjustments I did to our pumping costs and our water purchases, because we're actually producing less water. So our pumping costs, that trajectory is basically less. We've had less use of our bores as well. And the purchase of water, we did have a factor in there, because when we were doing the budget, we were considering we may have to purchase water from other councils, maybe Orange City Council. So there was a factor of $20,000 in there. So I've actually removed that, because it's unlikely, but very unlikely now we need to utilise that. So overall, it's still a satisfactory result, but once again, it's very difficult operating conditions for us. But it's certainly something that's not without precedent, something that certainly there's a trajectory where once we get to normal, quite many conditions, whatever normal is, yes, these days, we can certainly get to a position where we can certainly build that operating result back up again.
I don't think there's ever any use an average year. It's either dry or wet.
Yeah.
Just harking back to our strategic workshop,
Yep.
One of the risks we identified was our volatile source of income, and the strategy for mitigating that was to look at ways of broadening our income base in some
way
to get the income which is not as volatile as our water income.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly right. I mean, the other thing that makes your income seems volatile, and we have discussed this previously, is the 25-75 rule with residential water charges. Obviously, if you had an opportunity to go to, say, 50-50 and you had more fixed charge in your residential area, then you'd have more security of income going forward. But that's not the case, and I don't think that's going to change. So that's that 25-75 rule.
Really, I think the
we're going to work with.
Best practice guidelines allow you to go back to 50% if you've got a small
number of connections.
I think 5,000 connections or something.
4,000.
So the guidelines do recognise the fact that smaller utilities do struggle and need a greater proportion of fixed charges. It's just very arbitrary where they did lot.
Well,
they draw the line.
Yeah.
Correct.
And if they drew the line
at 10,000, it'd be good.
At 10,000, then we could adjust our mix of water sales and access charges to stabilise our income.
Correct.
Not get any more income, just stabilise it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Is there any separation between residential and commercial?
There's no requirement with commercial charges or non-residential water charges to have a proportion of the fixed access charge or availability charge to the usage charge. So you've got no such rule.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such rule also with sewerage either, where you have that sort of rule as well. You don't have that constraint. There is a formula to calculate residential sewer charges, but you're not constrained in terms of the fixed versus the variable component of it to the same extent. So it's a point that's sometimes overlooked. There's always the point made that with general purpose councils that your revenue is constrained because of rate pegging, and if you're just a water county council, you have an opportunity to increase your charges as you see fit at your discretion. Well, no, that's not the reality. The reality is that there are various constraint rules in the best practice guidelines that you've got to consider. Obviously, you've got to consider the impact on your consumers as well. But there's all other factors leading into that as well. So it's not a simple matter of, okay, we can just put up our charges as we see fit. So these are things that we face, but we can certainly discuss that at the strategy meeting. And by no means, once again, I don't have the answer. I think there'd have to be regulatory change in that regard. To help us.
Yeah, well, maybe we should be lobbying for that.
That's
the point.
Yeah.
Okay, I was just going to ask Peter, the track man K depreciation time. That was a timing issue. Does that mean that last financial year, where we thought we would have depreciation, we didn't? So,
correct.
It's hitting us as a variation this year, but it hit us as a positive last year.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
That's absolutely correct.
So it's just a timing issue.
Yes.
But we're unfortunately bearing that negative in a year when our sales are down as well.
Correct.
Would it be better to have got commissioned last year?
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, and on the Federation of the Water Assets coming up, I just thought of an anecdote that in Blaney Council, because the GP Council did revaluation of transport assets last year, and in Blaney Council is probably the same everywhere. We had independent review of the methodology that we adopted. We got Morris and Loder come in and have a look at how we'd approach to unit costs and remaining useful lives and all sorts of things. And as Peter says, you got a bit more flexibility with the transport asset than the water assets, but it was a pretty useful exercise. And at the end of the day, the charge we took on depreciation, the aggregate charge for depreciation and transport assets, was about $750,000 less than we were expecting. So it was a pretty worthwhile exercise.
Yeah.
More questions? No? Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you.
Aye.
Thanks, Craig. Next item, number 8, page 29. This is just wrapping up the Orange Pipeline for finance. Does someone like to move that? Councillor Newstead, Councillor Durkin, thank you. This is final report on the pipeline. Any questions?
Yeah, for you, Mr. Chairman, I thought this was a good sort of wrap-up and summary, and my thanks to Orange City Council, because they did all the heavy lifting with the accounting for this project, other than when we had to bring it into our books, which finally they had to deal with all the funding surrounding it. And finally, I know Council was interested in this, the final wash-up, excuse the pun, of this project, because what Council would recall that the original contribution was $2.5 million. We held back $100,000, if Council will recall, so it was actually 2.4 that we paid, and the final costs have come in and it's 2.291,300. So effectively we've got $108,700
So back. That $100,000 we held back, we end up not having to pay the toll.
Correct, yep. Correct. So effectively, I suppose, if you want to look at it, it's the saving is actually $208,700 on the original amount there. And we did actually leverage from that money by getting $14.2 million worth of network infrastructure for $2.3 million of contribution. So that's an outstanding result. We do have to take on the depreciation of the pipeline. That's
not so much.
That's a thing, but I think it's sort of just gives Council a good sort of closure on the financial aspects of that project.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. It's a good exercise to wrap up the project with a final Council resolution. So I'm certainly in favour of this. Any questions?
Yes, it's very good. Everybody involved, we can go to on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Including Orange.
Turns out, well, Orange got the money. good.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, and also obviously ties in with the 12 meg reservoir that we're getting as well. So it's affected. I know we talk about depreciation, this is a big thing to think about and consider, but this new infrastructure we've got now, it does definitely help NILES operators and to manage it. So.
Those in favour?
Aye.
Okay, next item, page 31. The minutes of the Audit, Risk and Improvement Committee. Someone like to move that? Councillor Walker, seconded Councillor Newstead. Thank you very much. Straightforward. If anyone got any questions, I can ask Gavin.
Yeah.
The Audit Committee meeting. Any questions? No. Okay. Those in favour? And item 10 on page 36, adopting the agency information guide. I think, Craig, did you move this one, Craig, I think?
Yep. Sure.
Thank you. Someone second, Councillor Hendrick, Councillor Durkin, thanks very much. It's a statutory responsibility to adopt one of these things. It's been circulated. Any comments? No comments, I will put that. Those in favour?
Aye.
Item 11, the draft impact. Update. So I'd like to know that we note that report. Councillor Walker, thank you. Councillor Newstead, thank you. Any questions of more in relation to this report? No, I'm asking all what's happening with the parks. But they tried to have a meeting, which coincided with the meeting with Jim Bentley and Orange, of the us and Forbes and Parks going to get together and talk about this. Has that been rescheduled, that meeting?
I'm unaware of it. Parks has been leading it, so I'm just really a follower at the moment. So.
Yeah.
I caught up, through you, Mr. Chairman, I caught up briefly with the general manager of Parks at the meeting with Jim Bentley.
Yeah.
And he did flag that we'll have to catch up in the near future to have a meeting.
Is there any more to quit mobile? The water issues they have?
discussions between Orange and Babylon and ourselves. And at the moment we are working with Orange, Cabon, in developing a strategy there.
So you may, Council may recall, Council endorsed for us to be involved with a strategy, a strategic review of both water systems with Cabon and CTW. Orange were aware of that but decided not to go with this as stage one of this high level process. That report, I've got a draft of that report received just recently. I'm just the stages of going through that report to move forward to a proposed next stage, which would include looking at a joint IWCM between both organisations, but and also making contact with the government to see what avenues we've got there for funding to fund future stages or future reviews. So,
that was done by Premise, was it?
Yeah, Premise and Chris Devitt, and Martin Hay through Premise. So I'll issue that report out to councillors for their information as well. Obviously, Molong or Cabon Council are keen to move that forward as quickly as possible, needing their infrastructure. I understand their filtration plant, they had an independent review done on their filtration plant. They came back. That review came back better than they originally thought. So they're just looking at some various options there to maintain their operations or to improve their operations. And we did discuss that briefly. Mel and I discussed that briefly with Ingrid yesterday as well from Infrastructure New South Wales. And I'm also trying to tee up a meeting with Graham Attenborough, who's the Chief Operating Officer for DTI Water, for the General Manager of Cabon Council and myself to meet with him to go over that strategic review.
Okay, and on the last point here, Noel, the QDAL Board and the Boney Well, these are the ones we've got, 50% funding to look at it, and preliminary indications were that was looking so good, and the prospect of bringing these things back into service again. And so the report's come out, and we've reviewed it, and given comments back. What's the substance of the review?
The consultant will now provide back with a final report on those.
Yeah.
But it will need preconditioning before those water supplies would be allowed to be entered into our pipeline, the existing pipeline.
So it wasn't totally, it's impossible to bring them back online?
No, it's not, but it will need, to put it in now without any pre-treatment would have caused us issues.
Yeah.
So it would be, Department of Health, we decide how we progress with that, whether it's boil water alerts, but it could be used as an emergency point. For us to use it as a potable water supply and keep water quality, for drinking water quality standards, we would have to do pre-treatment to those. So this final report is what pre-treatment needs to be done and how we can apply that. So it's still a good report for if ever we get caught again, we've got something on the table that we can refer back to as a starting point to go out and
Does that include the costings to do the treatment necessary to bring up the drinking water quality?
The final report will provide us with what treatment plants are available for us to explore. So then we can take it from there.
Yeah. Because those two projects were these drought emergency projects, and we were pretty desperate to get water from whatever source we could get water. And just as we say to the government when we talk about like Rollins, don't take your foot off the pedal just because it's rain. We also should, because of our project here, really, we shouldn't really take our foot off the pedal just because it's certainly not likely to need this supplementary water for a while.
Yeah.
So the same principle applies. It'd be nice to know what we need to do to treat the water. what installations are necessary to put in terms of, you know, pumping and treatment and dosing and all that sort of thing, and what it would cost, so that if we get to the stage where we need to dust them off again, we don't go back to square one.
That's right. Through you, Mr. Chairman, I totally agree. It's important that we increase our redundancy in our system while we've got the opportunity. So, and also know with the Vanderoo Bore, understand that is, yeah, can't be refurbished or removed, quite expensive to be refurbished, and you'd still have that water quality issue. But we're looking at other options there, obviously, with the water grid, central water grid pipeline, to try and offset that or to utilise that licence in that area for an additional supply. Mm.
Okay. All right, any more questions? No?
Just one quick one. If it's not true, Mr. Chairman, to not, if it's not too long of an explanation, how do you measure how much water goes over the wall? Like here at the beginning of this, you said that 15.6 gig of water has gone over since last July. How do you measure that?
Because we've got a level probe, it'll measure the height of the water, and we know that the overflow of the dam is what its height is. So we can measure, we know the length of the dam wall, and we know the section of water that can overflow. So we take it off the height of the water and apply that through a formula for knowing what the distances are. Then we can calculate how much it goes through. So it is a good indication, and it is a reliable indication, reflecting off what is going on. We also back up that with our downstream, we've got a little weir down there, and we can check that those calculations coming over, until we get lots of water running over, of course, but we can compare that our formula that we've used there to what is going through the V9.
And sorry, through you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll also, with the, if we've got the scour valve open, that's measured through the V-notch as well.
That's correct. We have that into the V-notch.
So we may be close to, sorry, maybe close to 16 gigs now with the water that's been flowing out recently.
It's amazing to have water overflowing in February. I mean, lots of water overflowing before, but I suspect it's pretty rare to have overflowing this late in the season.
If that amount of 16 being harnessed and put in the cup, what would the cup look like to now?
I'm not too sure.
I think
it's now 32, aren't they? So that would have been half.
That's about half the capacity of the cup.
Yeah, and they're about a third now, aren't they?
It's pretty insane. The pipeline, the overflow is massive. There's no way we could pump that across unless we pump down a lot earlier and allow ourselves a bit of freeboard in our existing dam.
Or an open channel.
Or an open channel, they can take it down there. Correct.
Yeah. That's a different issue, isn't it? Any more questions?
No, we would have to pump all that in, would we?
No, there's no way we could pump that much through the size of the pipeline that
environmentally, would we have to let some go anyway?
Yeah, so same environmental flows?
Yes, our environmental flows they're looking at is like 2 metres a day or 1.2 metres a day. But at the moment, we don't have a licence to release, we don't have a condition of licence to release environmental flows. That it will come through, but it will be part of our augmentation project process to adopt those values. So our licensing conditions for environmental flows aren't stated as values at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
And sorry, through you, Mr. Chairman, no, just with the Kiara to CTW Water Connection pump station at Woodstock is progressing well.
Yes, we now locked it up, so which is good. So having all the doors on and all the louvers on, we are now moving in to our electrical phase. So the installation of electrical has started, and the pumps, we have received the pumps, which has been one of our concerns because of COVID and delays in deliveries. We now have those pumps available for us. They're in our workshop, and we'll now be able to move those down into the pump station, and therefore we can start running through our pipe and getting all our piping connected up and our electrical in and give it a good condition, which will be Fantastic.
You do a commissioning with a test pumping from Cowra up to Woodstock, just to check everything works?
Oh, we've got gen sets in there, so we did not connect into the grid. The grid was too light to provide enough power for us. So we put gen sets there, and we've ordered our gen sets. They should have turned up by the end of this month. But we do have our electrician that's working on that. He's taking leave for a month. It's his normal time to take leave.
Yeah.
So we're getting everything installed, cables run, and when the electrician comes back, we'll do our final connections after March, April, a little bit.
Because the screens, sorry, the Cowra, but they've been well and truly completed now.
Yes.
So, yeah, we'll be able to bring that water back. As
just run. Run until some water pops out of the Woodstock pump station.
Yeah.
And check it's all working. Mm.
Yeah. So that'd be something I'd have to do. That we'd have to go on a maintenance schedule anyway, so correct. It's just going to sit there. Yes. But the proportion of the time, so that's going to be fairly, yeah, without going to test it continuously.
Correct. And by having the emergency our generator sets there, all the other people all that over at our, once a month or 2 months, whatever we put in there.
We need to have all this infrastructure just in case of drought. It comes at cost, operating cost.
Yes, and under the same conditions as what we have proposed with our carport, orange pipeline. We'd like to turn the water over, even though that pipeline of Trunkman H is being provided from Central Cableworks Water, so we don't have a dead water storage in there. Mm. But it'd still be nice to turn our pumps over to make sure that they're all operational.
Mm. More questions? Not those in favour?
Alright.
Thank you. And now move on to page 47. Item 12, maintenance of council's systems. Craig, would you like to move this one? Thank you.
Yep. Sir.
Moved by Councillor Bembrick, seconded by Councillor Newstead. By smiling at me. So any question, I'll just leave off. I don't need drinking water quality. Obviously, this was done before we had our discoloration problems in Blaine. Can you just update us on what the cause of all that was and what we have to do to fix it?
Yes.
And is this something which... I'm just thinking of... risk analysis is how big an issue is it? Is it likely to happen again? Do we know what caused it? Can we stop it happening again? That sort of thing.
Yes, through the chair. The issue that we are currently, or up until 2 days ago, the issue related to an increase in minerals being sourced from our Lake Rollins pipeline. From Lake Rollins through our pipeline and into our upland water treatment plant. The raw water samples that were taken at Blaney Water Treatment Plant showed a high level, particularly with manganese, and yet the raw water that is being sourced from the same lake and through a separate pipeline, of course, at Carpool Water Treatment Plant showed a lower value of manganese of that mineral. So somewhere in that pipeline that was being introduced into our system. The issue with manganese is once you mix it with chlorine, it oxidizes, which then takes the manganese out of suspension, drops it in, and that's where you get your cloudiness as it's coming out of suspension. You get that brown color, and also you start getting like little sand pebbles being shown as it solidifies. And that's the higher the content of manganese, the more that discoloration occurs. So the last flushing program that we had on our books, which we had been waiting for our drought to clear through, was Blaney. So the initial thoughts with the various town requests for dirty water or complaints for dirty water, They were all haphazard. Normally, with a dirty water complaint, it's confined to certain areas. So that's where we look back, and this is where we were finding these differentials between what was this mineral content entering Blandy water treatment plant was different. So the decision was made was, if we flush our Blandy system, we're only going to introduce this higher level of manganese through our Blandy water treatment plant, so we're actually going to contaminate more to flush out the sediment that's in the pipes. So we flushed out the pipeline between Lake Rylands and Blandy water treatment plant. And in doing that flushing, when we brought Blandy water treatment plant back online, we had a lot of air bubbles coming through from there, which is a normal offshoot of flushing. You do get entrained air in, and sometimes I think if councillors have ever gone to the tap, turned on the water, and hears all these white bubbles, put the glass down, and it always comes out and settles itself out. And this is what we were finding. The issue that we have then affects our sedimentation tanks, where we have a flock blanket. Those air bubbles come underneath the flock blanket and then open the flock blanket up, which means you're not having the ability to get that full production through your water treatment plant. So we had to get rid of the air bubbles. The only way we could get rid of air bubbles is to keep the water coming through. The more we keep the water coming through, the more we break open that blanket, or we have that flotation coming up and we start having problems with quality of water leaving that sedimentation. So it was that very fine balancing act. So during those times, however, we decided, you know, we need to get out into the public. It was bigger, it was exponentially, it was getting greater for us to, with the amount of people that were putting through complaints. So we did contact the Department of Health. We contacted the department, our water and wastewater contact with DPIE as well, and explained the process of what we had found and how we were undertaking those processes in trying to resolve the issue. So they were very supportive of what we had done and how we were doing it, and said it was not uncommon. They had a similar issue with Oberon in flushing through there. But in talking with my water quality manager, we have never had this issue in his working life with CTW that we had this increase in minerals coming from Lake Rowland. So it was one of those factors.
Coming from Lake Rowland, but only along Trunk Main X, not along Trunk Main A.
Correct. And it's a different pipe as well. So the pipe from Trunk Main X is a different type of pipeline than it is with Trunk Main A. So, however, flushing it was the first thing that, which has cleared it out. So now we have lost that increase in minerals. So our water treatment plant is back into full production and back to the water quality that we've always had.
So do we know where the manganese came from?
I have asked my water quality manager to give me a report, and we will discuss that with DPIE Water and try and come up with how this could have been introduced in that section, but it was more of clearing that out first to get our water quality back in and at least attempt some sort of a plan to work off, knowing what our sampling results were giving us.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago now, Bathurst had a problem with manganese, and there was a big issue though.
Yeah.
Couldn't work out where it was coming from, and they spent ages trying to work out what to do about it. Got consultants in to analyse it, all that sort of stuff. I'd be a little bit worried. We fixed it, flushed it, thought it was all fine, but unless we really know what caused the problem, it could pop up again because we don't know. Is it something where we need, as you say, we've never had this before.
Yeah.
Do we need someone to come in who knows all about manganese in water to say, oh yes, I know what's happened here, it's blah, 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 and really to get rid of that in the future, you're going to have to do this or something. Because is it something we've got the capability to analyse and solve? And
I think the bottom line would be to increase a flushing program into that truck, mate, so that issue doesn't come through. It hasn't been part of a flushing, a routine flushing program that we've had to undertake before.
But if we don't know what's caused it, and if it happens again, when the dams are 40%, I'm not going to want to flush stroke main cage off it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yes.
That's all. I mean, it's an issue. It's a risk issue. Something the council would be a little bit worried about. And if it's never happened to us before, I just wonder whether some expert needs to come in and say we've done the right thing or tell us to do something else. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Through the chair, we'll just wait until that report is correlated now that the boys have taken a breath. And I do want to congratulate our water treatment operators, all three, including our manager, just worked throughout the 24/7 and just kept trying and trying and resolving. So it was a big impost on them. Yeah. And as I said, we'll take a breath now that we're back into full production. We can do the report, we can correlate all the samples that were undertaken and put that into a report of what findings we had. And especially the findings now of the differences in the manganese levels that we're finding at this water raw water inlet to our water treatment plant compared to what we had before. But there's been a lot of lessons learned. We talked about how we could implement a better system of reducing the amount of water coming from Blaney Water Treatment Plant, and we did instigate coming through Plum Street from our Parkour Water Treatment Plant. Again, we've always passed water through to Millthorpe, but then we incorporated that into our Blaney system. So there has been some really good lessons learned in that, and if this does occur again, we'll be in a much better position to address it with water coming from from Carport Water Treatment Plant to give us that extra time to reduce the drawing out of the plant.
So, just through you, Mr. Chair. So, no, there was no health risks and no odour with it, because at home we didn't notice it. Maybe it was obvious, but we didn't. Yes. I've been drinking the water. Mm.
Of course, the aesthetic value was a problem. And as I've said, the mineral of manganese is usually suspended within your water. So you're drinking it, but the problem is it's oxidised. That value got so high, it oxidised, it dropped it out, gave that cloudy colour. And especially when you put a cloudy colour in a white bath or something like that. And this oxidising, if you've got a shower head and you turn the water on your shower head and you put that in the bath, well, it's creating more oxidisation, so you're going to release more of the manganese out into a solid form. So that's why you can get a really bad looking, you can take two samples and one looks terrible because you've agitated it more with your, and introduced more air into it, so it's dropped it out further. But the quality of the water, it was still safe to drink. It did meet the Australian Drinking Water Guidelines. It's the aesthetic side of it, and I certainly don't ask anyone to drink it if they see that. But when you settle it out, you take that sample and settle it out. So the way we addressed it was go straight back with our network operators. They did go out, they did take samples themselves of the water. We took it at the meter, not to exclude out any piping issues that may be occurring within households, especially galvanised iron pipes and things like that, and they have been in there at its age. So when we did take those water samples, the majority of them come out very good. But it's that agitation when by the time the years it's got there. Sink mixes is another perfect example where you're mixing the water and it's aerating as it comes out. So that also introduces that extra discoloration.
That was, by the way, being critical at the start.
Oh, no,
absolutely
not.
Fantastic job.
Oh, please don't.
Looking from a sort of council's point of view on what the lessons from all of this.
Of course.
Just so with manganese, is that something we would normally test for?
Yes.
So we normally test for all the time. Yes. So at no point we didn't see a gradual increase to a point that it became an issue.
It became an exponential issue. Yes. It was coming up and coming up, and the boys were. They were aware of those increased manganese, and that's why they were doing further samples. But then it exponentially, as soon as it breaks and we meet that value of manganese to the chlorine, and we chlorinated it.
Mm.
Once it hit, once that broke away, then that's where we start putting it through our system. So
yeah.
As I said, there's a lot of lessons learned in that now.
Yeah, it's more
the trigger points of where we look at our manganese now. We can also do that.
More to it, because if it's a build-up inside that system, you're going to have build-up inside other lines as well, so at which point do we then say, yep, that's a trigger for our now for a flushing procedure to perhaps begin and start flushing those systems out, so.
Mm. So look, it could have been, well, it definitely hasn't been flushed within 7 years of person's work time in
with
our work on operators here. I mean, certainly hasn't been flushed in that time.
Is there any technology to inspect something that goes down in the lines or something like that, so as far as our massive measurement stuff? Is there any technology that can send something down the line to inspect them or check things?
The cleaning of them is one of the first things that you would want to do anyway. So
yeah,
there's certain things. You can get ice picks that you can put down, you know, and you can blast that ice through, and that'll clean through the walls as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, you would always start off on the least expensive.
Yeah.
So you sort of flush it through, which is what our guys did. It was just the introduction of that air, and because we had let the water treatment plant drop down, because we were trying to control the amount of water coming in and trying to reduce those flow rates. And we got to a point where once we brought the system online, we were starting in a bad environment. We needed to have that higher. And it just, that's where the pressures came on. So the lessons learned in it, yes, there's many.
So, Mr. Chair, to know, with all the excess water, you're flushing all the mains in every village and town?
We have one town left, which is going to flush.
that's commencing tomorrow, as I understand it.
It is. There's sections of it starting tomorrow. We have to make sure that we have full production here. Because, again, the last thing we want to do is start flushing and then we have problems getting water back in, as well as knowing that the water quality was going to be available. So at the moment we're sitting on around 95%. It was a big job for the boys, but very tedious for them. And you know, sometimes they were winning, other times they were not. That was one of those really hard ones to work through. But you know, together with the boys and Josh, you know, they knuckled in and got the good results we're after.
Be another benefit for our Fort Meg reservoir. A bit more
yes.
Clear water to okay, thanks a lot. We've been talking about something which wasn't in the report.
It hadn't occurred.
But yes, no reportable instance. Any other questions of Noel on item 12?
Quick question, the water filling stations, are they still going
yes.
on?
Yes.
Well, have you had so much rainfall?
I'm not too sure.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Yes. In relation to Councillor Durkin's inquiry, yes, they're still being used, obviously not as much as during the drought, of course. The cost of actually having them versus the income is certainly it's a community service that we're providing, meaning that we're not recovering, wouldn't be recovering our costs. But in saying that, we have had inquiries from time to time from people that want proper water in there, and they certainly have been using them. Actually, I think someone rang the other day, wanted to know if they could use the one in Kewdale or Cargo, I think. And we obviously haven't got them all in our conditioners yet. And I think they come into Manildra with a tanker, and I explained to them how to connect it after I'd spoken to them the whole, about how to get the can locks and stuff. And they never got back to me, so they were quite happy with the service they received. So, yeah, there is still some usage.
Yeah, we fielded a similar question for Yugara as well. They were looking for water, and I said, you realise we've got an automatic filling station here?
No.
Where is it?
Mm.
So it's still being used.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, we just need some one in the Blaneyshire area.
Yes, they had other priorities for their ground. Yeah. Any more questions? Okay, those in favour? Now we move on to Noel's second report, the performance of the systems. Thanks, Craig. Someone like to move this?
Craig.
Thank you. Councillor Benbrick, thank you very much. A full participant in this meeting. Seconded, Councillor Walker. Thanks very much. Questions of Noel in relation to this report? Yeah, I've just got a little name here. I'm trying to work out what it means. Main breaks, item A, all of those there. The second footnote, the above information, which is all the various breaks, assists CDW with planning priorities for its reticulation mains replacement program. So I was going to ask that now we've got all this information, not just this month, but previous times, where we're getting the breaks, what does it tend to show about which mains replacement program is the most important to us now?
Yes, through the chair, we've been a bit hamstrung with Millthorpe in working with the Blaney Council because of encroachment of certain tree planting and gardening coming across over our pipeline locations.
Yep.
And there's certain areas in the Millthorpe area that we have been avoiding doing a full replacement on until we're working with Blanshire Council to put a bit of community consultation, especially for those people that have added their gardening or extended their gardening out a little bit further, which is encroaching on us, which meant if for us to do certain replacements of what we would normally do when we have a multitude of failures of pipes, we would normally try to take it all the way back through, but in certain sections it would have meant going through gardens and things like that, which obviously the residents are very proud of, and we certainly didn't want to be seen as being overzealous. So we have talked to Blaney Shire Council about those, and we've been out.
So this is to work with the council. If there's a section of mains going through Millthorpe somewhere along one of the roads or the footpaths or something, where we're getting a lot of mains breaks because of roads and footpaths and stuff, working with council members, so we're going to have to replace this section here. It seems that it's always, of course, it's a problem. We're going to put it somewhere else. Where's it best to go? And if we put it here, can you make sure that you don't plant any trees anywhere near it? Is that the sort of working with them you mean?
Correct.
Yeah.
As well as the residents have encroached down on their garden. They're coming past
It's interesting. Yeah, if I could just interrupt there. At Blaney Council, on a meeting or two ago, we approved a policy on planting, what's it called, verge? I forgot what the policy was called, which related to people planting stuff outside their boundary on the verge. Mm. And the report came up to council with a whole lot of photographs of what people had done. And some people had sort of just taken up the whole footpath. And a lot of complaints, you can't walk past, etc. And I just go, what happens when it's all great when they plant it, but then they get a bit sick of it and it just goes to rack and ruin, the weeds grow and so on. And so the point of the policy was to try and restrict, encourage people to look after it, but not to encroach too much on the footpath. That was sort of the gist of it. So in the context of that policy, maybe we should have had something else in the policy to say, and you certainly can't plant stuff on the verge if it's going to be anywhere near a water main.
Was that underground electricity? Is there set guidelines with when they're positioned?
Okay, so first answer to the question is Millthorpe.
Yes, so Millthorpe is a classic case that has hamstrung us a little bit. But we did meet with Director of Operations, Grant Baker, there. He came out on site with us and we explained the areas.
Yep.
And they have provided us with some drawings now that can assist us in actually giving us a possibility of relocating these mains so we're not interrupting this increase, with the increase of the garden coming out to the footpaths. So that's been really good. That gives us a clear path if council, Blaney Council then is agreeing to us coming away from that, the existing, and we can come out towards the road more. So that would be ideal.
Yeah.
So these are the things we're talking about for the Moldock. So we're planning those now, that's current. That will assist us with the brakes that we had planned for replacement of the old AC mains. With the Blaney area, Freight Street, we've always had that on the plan to do a full replacement of that, and that was also one that when breaks occurred we took advantage to go back to a certain area, put an extra stop valve in to enable us to keep water going in while we're progressing that breaks replacement. So those ones are on the board, they've always been there ready to go, it's finding the time to do them. So this is what I was saying about, we can use those extra planning priorities now, especially with Northport, to put it forward to the council. This is what's holding us back. We need to get that up and running, and then with our Blaney side, we'll also do that. Carcor's another one. It's been 75% have been completed and upgraded, but we've got little sections in the higher end that we thought the pressures are always in the lower end. That's what was concentrated on. However, we're starting to find failures in the higher end, which were a lower priority at the time when the replacement program went through. So it's a matter of just going through, matching up those areas that are starting to give more failures and do a full replacement, not just a part.
Yes, okay, good.
Okay. So through you, Mr. Chairman, so no, the majority at the moment where our priority would be in the Blaney Shire area, the other areas were renewed over the last sort of 10 to 20 years, so we may not, we will not have in the same.
And these are all pretty much all reticulation systems.
They are. Our main, our mains are going well, our trunk mains are
holding
in well.
Yeah.
But these are the elements of
Norfolk and Carpool. And Freight Street. Okay, no, that's just interesting. That's good.
Previously, Chairman, we do have $81,000 in the current year's budget for routing mains renewal.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same for about the next subsequent 2 years, and then after that we double it to $160,000. Council will recall that with the funding for Truck Mine K, that we actually we didn't make provision for our RETIC, for renewing our RETIC system, but we've started to put funds back into that now. The Truck Mine K has been commissioned.
Okay, thanks. Any more questions? No. No, those in favour. Eric, thank you very much. Now we get to questions on notice, of which there's none.
No.
Then we go into confidential to deal with the board leakage account that's in the business paper together with a late item.
That's correct.
As well.
Okay. Yep.
Someone like to move number 15? That's the Newstead. Seconded by Councillor Best. Thank you very much. Those in favour? Harry? So we are now.
Do you want to move accept it now? The link?
Oh, we'll just deal with it next one we get to it, I think. I see, before we go into.
Yeah, a little bit coming out.
No. You were a step ahead of me. I think we're happy to include the second water leak delayed item on the agenda. Thank you very much. We're moving to closed session to deal with those two items now. The first one.
Yep.
Okay, we have finished our confidential part of this meeting. We're back in open meeting. I just want to report on the outcome of the two items considered in closed session. The first one was consideration of concession for water leakage on account number 27. 000009. and the decision of council was to grant a one-off, on a one-off basis, a leakage allowance concession of 50% of the difference between the consumption in the September quarter, not the December quarter, but the September quarter, compared to the three corresponding periods. The second item in closed session was a late item dealing with a water leakage concession application for account number 29202005. And the decision of council there was that council grant on a one-off basis a leakage allowance concession of 50% of the difference between the average three corresponding periods and the water consumption for the September and December 2020 water accounts. That concludes the business of this meeting. Thank you for your attendance, and I'll declare the meeting closed.
Thank you.